Very, very pleased to be here. Thank you for inviting us. We're not geographers, so kind of we're from Gothenburg. So we don't. I'm Franz James.
And I'm Sophia.
This is our background. So I'm a product designer, interior designer, lecturer in furniture design, researcher within a research project we'll talk about, and also my practice as a designer. I design for these carceral spaces and mental health.
And my background is in healthcare. I'm a critical care nurse, and I have a clinical research position at a forensic psychiatric hospital in Gothenburg. So, we will have our departure point talking about physical environment, well-being, and particular carceral design heritage. Physical environment is not only the built environment, but it's also the surroundings and includes also a social material space. We define well-being from an existential point of view based on a theory of well-being developed by Galvin and Todros, built upon Heidegger's notion of the willing and mobility. Well-being means having the possibilities to move forward in life and realizing one's life projects. In this manner, well-being is something that goes beyond of an illness.
Particular design heritage, as we see it, is an often unreflected and many times unintentional practice by architects, designers, and authorities. And heritage, in this meaning which we are speaking about, is not only what has been in the past, but also what shapes today's and tomorrow's physical environments.
So, a little bit of background. The Swedish National Board of Institutional Care, so-called SIS, is the governmental authority that provides compulsory care for children and adolescents with severe psychosocial problems, drug and substance use, and or criminality, when all other interventions have failed. The children and adolescents are offenders and convicted to care, and in Sweden we don't have any children youth prisons. We have about 23 special residential homes, and they accommodate about 700 beds for children and adults between 12 and 21 years, and sometimes also as young as 8 years old. The majority of youth have school within the institutions, and they also have a long institutional career. So, the relevance of this paper is most important since the government are planning and have started to build new standard units for 300 additional beds. And the research project we are in consists of a multidisciplinary research team where our aim is to create knowledge about the impact of the physical environment for the incarcerated youth from the youth perspective as far as possible. So, our theoretical framework. Our theoretical framework is based on the concept of queer phenomenology. Specifically, we are interested by the concept of fit and orientation developed by Sarah Ahmed. There are two core concepts in her critical theory. The concept of fit is defined when our bodies and objects are repeatedly orientated towards each other, so they become a familiar background for one's experiences and direction in life. Ahmed uses this phenomenology as a way to understand, and I quote, how bodies are directed in some way and not other, as a way of inhabiting or dwelling the world. This theory offers, in our view, an understanding of the impact of the physical environment in relation to well-being, as defined, realizing one's projects in life. And in this meaning, we see how carceral heritage in the design of the physical environment directs or orientates toward existential and physical incarceration. So we are specifically interested in what does it mean to be a child or adolescent and be incarcerated? How does it feel? And what does it do to them?
So our aim is to unpack and discuss partial layers of particular design in the light of what is being built today. Further, its impact on well-being, and this we boil down to a model that we will show you later to illustrate the dialectic relationship between the physical environment and incarcerated children and adolescents. We have visited 10 homes, where four we have spent at least a week of each for data collection. Each home consists of several units, and depending on 3 to 6 they could be, and it could be acute care, it could be for rehabilitation, it could be a more open one, or for neuropsychiatric diagnosis. The majority of these special youth homes are built in the 1940s up to the 1990s, but even some in the 19th century. Some are in former prisons. And as the background also for the new, building the new ones, in 2015, Sweden received a substantial number of young men from Afghanistan and Morocco. We have, for our field work and for our data collection, used two methods, which we've used in previous research in similar contexts. As we have said before, prisons, forensics, psychiatric hospitals, mental health, and so forth. And these two methods are sketch and talk and photo books.
So, a few words about ethics. Since we have collected data on site and directly engaged with the youth in their rooms, the ethical considerations are and should be prominent in relation to this vulnerable group who rarely can make their voice heard. And this study has been approved by the Committee of Ethics in Gothenburg University and, of course, guided by the principles of ethics according to the Helsinki Declaration.
Because of the method of sketch and talk, I describe it as an ethnographic design method, and it came from when I visited prisons and forensic psychiatric hospitals. Due to security restrictions, it was not possible to use either camera or any sort of digital device. However, the designer's tool of a pen and the sketchbook were accepted. The sketches are done by the researcher, and as a medium also they have come to discuss abstract questions about the interior in open-ended interviews. So when focusing on an object and sketching it and talking to the person, it not only situates the object spatially, but it also situates it us. And this is the sort of illustration of what happens there. So the research is not always the center of the sketching, nor is the respondent. So we both agree to the situation. And it also removes tension and creates interest. I also find it as a good ethical method to use because I could show, okay, this is what I've done here, is it okay for bringing?
Photo voice. So photo voice is both the method and methodology stems from sociology, and the method is developed by Wang and co-researchers. They in studying marginalized groups to empower and create changes by critical consciousness. So we chose photo voice not only to elicit our data, but also to document the physical environment through the eyes of the youth. The children and adolescents, they were invited to take part of the study by taking photos with a Polaroid camera of different aspects of their immediate surrounding that they associated with the feeling, regardless positive or negative. The children were offered to keep the photos, and however, sometimes we also took some photos to document to them important issues. And we discussed these photos during the interview, and you can see the theoretical background of photos here. And we would like to show you a couple of photos taken by the participants and some sketches done by the researcher. So, this girl took this photo, and it's to show us her uncomfortable bed. And the bed was a recurring theme in all our data, actually everywhere, regardless if it was a female or male, sees home. And here too, this young man took this photo to show us the prison-like environment as a background for his identity. And here is another example. I imagine you can see it very clearly from here, but these barbed wires and it's the view from the kitchen window. And this girl showed us the isolation room with the marks of desperation and resistance on a steel door. And finally, one of the girls took this photo and said that the rooms here resemble of those in jail.
I'll speed up here. So this young man says that he's so used to this environment. He's been living in institutions since he was 11 years old. Now he was 18. He said it was pretty good because he was so used to it. Are you ready? This young man told us how the physical environment actually punished him corporally through the placement of the lap, which he bumped his head into every time he was reading and getting up from the bed. This very young girl had to place the mattress on the floor due to nightmares, and also with severe anxiety at times, which kept her awake. She also created scribblings on the wall. The same girl tells us again that the bed is so uncomfortable that she can't sleep. And this young man would really want to do something to paint the torn walls, but didn't have the energy to do it.
So, our core question, and where we apply our theoretical framework, is how the physical environment fits or reorientates in relation to the youth institutional career. And remember that the aim for the youth, according to Swedish state, is to rehabilitate and make a way for change. So it means coming back to a life without drugs or criminality. And now we would like to illustrate this with our model.
So according to Ahmed, orientation is about how the bodily, the spatial, and the social are entangled. In this sense, space as well as the objects in space could be understood as agents in a dialectic relationship with the power to orientate the body in one way or another. Therefore, to be orientated means to be turned to certain objects, but not to others, and how these guide us in finding our way in life. With this notion of orientation, we use the concept of fit to illustrate when a trained and ready body is attuned to certain environment, namely the carceral, and how this orientates outwards and away from the care process to the former life's self-destructive behavior and the criminal identity. So the concept of fit here builds on three interlinked steps which occur when the ready and attuned body enters an environment with a strong carceral design heritage. And firstly, the physical environment in the design as designed in a manner that confirms the identity of the young body as an offender. Remember, he or she is used to it. Apart from speaking of distrust, which it also does, it's the hard architecture. And we also see this as a description on why we speak of challenging environments, but also provocative environments. So the carceral environment orientates outwards. And this is in our model that suggests a breakdown in communication and in caregiving processes, especially the personal ones. And the right image then displays the concept of reorientation. In other words, the tuned body does not resonate with the non-personal environment, and in the same way as the left model. So the three interlinked steps in this model rather orientates towards a reorientation back to the self and beyond the facade of the troubled youth. And this reorientation opens for the interpersonal caring, relationships, and rehabilitation, and empowerment and well-being. So we also want to stress this by showing these images here, and up here, there are 60 years between these two. The left is the fantastic prison of Halden. The right is Kronobergshäktet in Stockholm from the 1950s. Down here is a model of what the prison services production facility create and produce, and to the right, a special residential youth home. And we show these, and I'll speed up, because there's such a strong resemblance if we're discussing how these environments look. But also because they're all designed and built for surveillance, that when you see the room, you can see every part of it. And that also, we will leave it there.
So do we have time before wrapping up.
You're on 15 minutes, so okay. You're now in question time, so yep. Feel free to conclude.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what is built today with carceral heritage shapes the future of incarcerated youth. So, in other words, we have to critically view the institutional design because the intention of the care and the outcome of the care contradicts each other. And the ideology behind the carceral design is a penal ideology, which is, of course, in contrast with the well-being and finding one's way in life. So, in conclusion, the carceral design heritage is strong and prevalent in special residential youth homes, and it is of utter importance to critically consider it. Consider this design of contemporary standard rooms in special use homes, and so to lay the perspective of what is intended to be produced in this specific context, as well as to reevaluate the impact that carceral heritage may have on well-being. So, thank you.